Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
whatever you feel you need to do, you go right ahead and do it, sir.
well, for now.
Just
for
trying
now,
to be supportive.
No, I just I always laugh at that rejoin because it's just funny. It's like, I don't know where I come up with some of the stuff I come up with, but
well, I just like it when you call people smarty pants. So that's my favorite.
No,
smarty pants. How about this? Dr. Fauci is saying that the NFL needs to be prepared to follow the NBA, to follow the MLS, and go into a bubble if they want to play their season this fall. Quote, unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall. If there's a second wave, which is certainly a possibility and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season, football may not happen this year. Could you do football in a bubble, Key? Because look, basketball makes sense to me in a bubble because basically you're playing every other day. So that you don't – football, you play once a week. What do you do for the 6 days you're waiting around for the next game? I know there's practices and meetings and stuff, but yeah, it's not practice, like basketball.
It's the same thing. You practice and you meet. It's the same thing. You could do it in a bubble, but the problem is if you do it in a bubble – you got all them teams, where would you – stadium, like one stadium? Like where you going – what you going to play a game – going to play 3 games a day, 4 games a day? I mean, I don't know how you do it. I mean, I just like – and you certainly going to listen to the doctor. There's no question about it in certain situations. But I like how he says there's a possibility there could be a second way. I mean, he didn't give you any definitives. You know, so he certainly is – doing things very cautious on how he speaks about the situation coming up. Now, as far as him saying that there's not going to be a football season is right around the corner. Now, they're going to training camp here in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they plan on starting and stopping, because they're going to start. Everything is indicating they're going to start. I mean, there's nothing that says, oh, well, there's no contract negotiations. There's no work stoppage. There's no, you know, there's none of that going on.
No, so they're on.
Like that they're ready
on,
to go.
Yeah, they are ready to go. And we'll see if they start on time.
And you're going to have people within the organizations test positive,
of
as we just
are.
Saw, Ezekiel Elliott, as well as a couple other players. So you're going to get that. And I understand what he's saying, going home, coming back, doing those sort of things. We don't know. Maybe there is no go home. Maybe there is you go stadium, like training camp. Maybe the whole season is training camp where you're going to be the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm using Dallas as an example. The Cowboys facility is probably the best facility in all of professional sports. They got a hotel connected to their practice facility. And so everything is right there. They could keep them all right there. They can't go anywhere. Turn in your keys in this box, although some of them will get an Uber, I'm sure. Turn in your keys in this box. We're going from the facility to the hotel, and that's it. Everything we're doing is right here. That could be something that teams are going to do, and we just don't know because they haven't unleashed their plans yet.
Keep in mind, like the traveling parties for these NBA teams are in the 30s, right? That they're each team is bringing about 30 people to Orlando to be in the bubble. And then as the teams stay in advance, maybe they're talking about being able to add some more personnel the deeper you go into the place. Football, like you said, Key, never mind the 50-some-odd guys you got on the team. How many people are make a football team go week to week? A couple hundred?
Well, you don't need all of those people to move around with you. The office people are the office people. You don't need the ticket guy to distribute the tickets because he ain't nobody going to the game. So you don't have to. Certain people are not going to be able to accompany you because it's just bodies that you don't need. But overall, I would probably say to run and operate a football team on a game day, it's probably 80 people,
That's game day, though. You talk about masseuses and trainers and doctors and strength.
No, that's including. I'm including the trainers. I'm including the doctor. I'm including that as an 80. That's probably an 80 to a 90-man crew. So let's say, for instance, I'm flying to a city. We go commercial, but it's private commercial. Mm-hmm. And the only people on there is that 90 people. We're not flying the press with us. We're not. The press is cool, but you're not getting on the plane with us. So you keep it with your core group of people, and that team that you're going to play, the New York Giants, they're in wherever they're at in upstate New York practicing or whatever they're doing. When they ready to move, they're moving to their stadium, and it's the same crew of people. And I think you could do it that way.
What'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, you're right, Key, that Dr. Fauci said there was a possibility of a second wave. But keep in mind, we're still technically in the first wave. And what we've seen, at least according to the numbers, is that there's been an increased amount of cases and an increased amount of hospitalizations since states started relaxing the laws. They've been in direct correlation. Relaxed laws, increased cases, increased hospitalizations. The question is, how is the NFL going to handle the positive diagnosis of their players? And how much of a trail are they going to follow back with that player to see whether or not they should cancel the season? Because if you have a player who tests positive, say on Tuesday, and he played a game on Sunday, you're asking yourself, do you now need to go back and follow where he was on Sunday on the field and notify the other team, right, about whether or not they have any cases that are positive? And if so, does anyone need to be hospitalized? And how many of those cases are going to need to be captured before you find out you may have to put a pause on the season? We don't know those numbers, but these are definitely the questions that I'm assuming now, because the NFL has done some real stupid stuff over the years, but I'm assuming they're asking themselves, what's the maximum amount of infections that we can handle responsibly while still maintaining our season? Those are the important questions, because there's no way, bubble or no bubble, you're going to keep the positive diagnosis from reaching the NFL. What you can do is have a plan in place for a critical mass. What is that critical mass? How is it determined? And how are you going to take care of those people?
Well, the NBA has already said there's going to be positive tests. There's just virtually absolutely no way to keep absolutely it out. It's what do you do, like you were saying, LZ, when you have them? Because it depends on how Rudy Gobert tests positive, then Donovan Mitchell tests positive, and it's like, okay, it's on. Well, the fact of the matter is, at least as far as we know, none of the other members of the Utah Jazz got sick. So if you can identify these people quickly and remove them from the pool, is that good enough? Or if you have this domino effect where this guy gets it and this guy get it and they played against this team last week and now two guys over there have it, you might not get out of the gates before you have to say, you know what, this just doesn't work again. I'm sure the NFL is going to be looking at some of these other leagues to see how they deal with it, to see how the spread is. But then you've got the whole other variable with the NFL, at least, that just the nature of the sport is different. As physical as basketball is, as close contact as basketball players have with one another, it's not the NFL. I mean, the NFL is its right own thing, where people are laying on top of each other. Their faces are literally inches apart from one another. That the, you know, the spit and the sweat and the blood and everything's just flying all over the place. It's a different animal altogether. So if you have two players on Team A test positive, and then two guys that they played on Team B on Sunday test positive, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, how do we do this? This is the great unknown. We just don't know how the dominoes start to fall at this point. Maybe you can remove those guys real quick and keep it moving, and it's not a big deal. But maybe not. We just don't know until we start to do it.
Yeah, and you would, I mean, obviously it could spread like a fire. There's no question about it. But much like you said with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, no one else really tested positive. So if you catch it early, and I'm assuming that each NFL team and the league itself will be testing like constantly on a regular basis, like just constantly testing, even though you could test negative one day and then positive the next, they've got to continue to test throughout the week couple times a week to even be able to get a gauge on where this thing may be heading within the organization. Because your organization can stay clean all week long, and you can go and play against somebody else, and that one in particular person could affect you. Now it's affecting your whole team for the following week.
What happens?
Remember, too, though, guys, where no one else will test it positive from the Utah Jazz. They're right. Not required to tell us a diagnosis, nor are they required to tell us the severity of the case that they encountered. And we already know that the NBA has granted the players that amount of leeway. Like, we don't know. We know that there were eight players that played with the Nets that had gotten tested positive. We don't know everyone that was tested positive from the Nets when they did. We knew KD's name.
No,
but we didn't know anyone else's name.
Yeah, but it ain't
so
even
we don't
names.
Know who else in Utah. We don't know who else is in Utah because they don't have to tell us.
But it ain't the names, though, LZ. People most likely going to say if they tested positive, especially at that time. They're not going to withhold the positive or negative test. They're going to let you know. That's the way I've seen it.
Why?
Because they just
didn't happen.
Can you not connect the dots like this, though? Can you not connect the dots with if it did go from Gobert to Mitchell, and even if the rest of the guys or many of the guys did get infected, but we don't know about it, wouldn't the league be far less likely to reboot knowing that they're going to get positive tests because this is how easily it gets spread? That they would be far more hesitant to do it? I'm speculating. I'm just trying to connect the dots.
No, here's the situation, right? Based upon my reporting and chit-chats with people who work for the league, is that there are a number of cases that the media hasn't reported on or is not made aware of, or both, but that the office is aware of. And remember, we just saw this week that the Denver coach just told us he had it and overcame it, but we never knew when he had it. He didn't tell us until what I'm saying. We're assuming that there were only two cases in Utah. We don't know if there were other cases, but the guys didn't really get sick, and so they didn't report it. They didn't tell it. It wasn't in the media. So the NBA is trying to keep up with these cases in terms of people in their personal lives. But there comes a point when you're talking about the NFL in which, just because of the sheer numbers, it's going to be almost impossible for them to actually be able to do a very good, thorough job in and of themselves of trailing where that player has been.
What happens if a whole team, and I don't mean like literally, but you have a team where 12 guys get it, right? And you have an outbreak inside a team, and they need to be quarantined for 2 weeks. What does that do to the whole? Can you play a season if one team, for all intents and purposes, doesn't have enough guys to put on the field? Is the season over at that point?
They're gonna find the guys. They got practice squad guys. They're gonna find them. It's street free agents. They're gonna put a team together.
That's the plan, right? Like, you got to have a contingency plan, because if your offensive line goes down.
Oh, they got somebody ready to call. They got somebody. They already got quarantined.
Okay.
Sitting there and they left.
Let's say that's exactly what they do. They pick up the phone and say, okay, protocol number 265. Let's implement that backup offensive line that we've had in the secret bunker ready to go. Bring them in. How legitimate is a season if half the teams in the league have to bring in guys that we don't even know who they are, that we've never known their names, that we're playing in the XFL, that we're playing in Canada, that all these things? It's like, at that point, what is this league?
Man.
What does this championship mean?
Hey, man. Hey, Travis.
Yes?
I have solidified my obligation as an owner of the National Football League to put the product on the field. Therefore, don't ask me for my money back, sponsors.
There you go. That's probably what it is. All right. Kyrie Irving and Kendrick Perkins do not like each other very much, and picking a fight with Perk seems like a bad idea. We'll explain next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. You know, we've gotten more than an hour into the show, guys, and we haven't talked about Kyrie Irving today, so we should probably fix that and make sure that we get into Kendrick Perkins going at him yesterday. This is probably the best example of why Kyrie Irving is having trouble separating himself from his message, because guys look at him a certain way. I want you guys to listen to Kendrick Perkins, who was on Get Up, and Perkins was talking about, this is why Kyrie has a problem leading a group.
When you look at Kyrie, I'm okay with you changing your mind and having a different way of thinking and saying, you know what, we need to make a stance, but and sit out. But what is the plan after that? He didn't have one. So once again, that showed his lack of leadership, Greeny. And guess what's been going on for the last 2 days in our world? Two people have been lynched in the state of Texas. And have that been highlighted like it should have been? No, because for the last 2 days, we have been talking about Kyrie Irving. So Kyrie Irving, right now, you are the distraction. You are the distractor. You distracting the whole situation. It's crazy to me because, you know, you come out and you do something separately without talking to your president, Chris Paul, or consulting with Michelle Roberts, and go off and do something totally different and get a group of guys together and say, let's sit out without a plan. It makes zero sense, and I totally disagree with Kyrie Irving.
So that was on TV.
Perk sound like you've been talking to somebody.
Well, he's angry, and he also said,
no, I mean,
on Twitter,
like, it sounds like he's been dialed in.
Well, he is. And look, Keith, they know, right? They know where Kyrie's coming on from on this. We talked about it yesterday with the LeBron angle, and he's kind of out on an island. He also said on Twitter, if you take Kyrie Irving's brain and put it in a bird right now, guess what that bird's going to do? It's going to fly backwards. Then Kevin Durant called Perkins a sellout, and then Perkins went back to Durant saying, using some colorful language, you better be cool and chill because I honestly took it light on Kyrie today. What I could have exposed, all of it, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, what he's been doing on those phone conversations, carry on. That guys don't trust Kyrie Irving, and Kendrick Perkins put a voice to that.
I wonder why KD stepped in that, though. I mean, there's some stuff you just don't step in. You know what I'm saying? I don't care how good of buddies you are, you friends you are, you stay out of certain things. It'd be interesting to hear why KD decided to come to the defense of his new teammate. But I think at the end of the day, man, you know, Kendrick Perkins is right in a way that if you got something and you're willing to do it, what's the plan? What's the before plan, the middle plan, and the after plan? You can't just go into something, dive in here first, and don't have no life jacket or anything because you're going to drown. You know, especially if you don't know how to swim. And it sounds like clearly Kyrie Irving don't know how to swim in these situations.
I really could have exposed the whole blank that he's been doing on those phone conversations, carry on. That, to me, is the point. That, look, don't even start, Kyrie. Don't even start trying to defend this guy, because if you really want to go there, I know what was said on these phone calls. I know what was said in these conference calls about what he's doing. If you really want me to put it out there, I will, which is him saying, look, Kyrie is not in this for the cause. Kyrie is not in this to try to bring attention to an issue that needs attention. He's in this for his own selfish reasons. That's what Kendrick Perkins is saying. Am I wrong?
Well, I think he's saying that, but he's also saying that he's trying to hijack the conversation and turn it into everything about Kyrie. Like, you on these phone conversations saying things when other people aren't on it to, I don't know who you're talking to, but whoever you're talking to, certainly you feel like they listening to you, and you hoping that they're not listening to the Chris Pauls or LeBron Jameses of the world. That's what it sounds like he's saying to me.
All I know is that I don't want to mess with Kendrick Perkins. That seems like a bad idea. Well, he seems like a very serious guy.
Yeah, from a physical standpoint, you may not want to. You may want to run him around in the ring a couple times, get him tired. But yeah, you certainly wouldn't want him to grab you because he doesn't seem nice when he gets a hold of you.
Well, when we talk about the Kyrie plan, right? I don't know how to characterize it other than to call it that, but we've already lost what he was allegedly trying to focus on, and that is the issue, because we've spent now instead of talking about a new league or now talking about social justice and making sure that the attention's put on that, now we're talking about a feud between Kyrie and Kendrick Perkins. Now we're talking about Kyrie being sneaky behind people's back on phone calls.
But we don't have to. That's why I'm not engaging. We don't have to do this. We don't have to. We're choosing to do this. That's why I'm not really engaging. We don't have to let Kyrie or anyone take our focus away. We don't. There is no reason to talk about this Twitter beef between these three grown men. We're focusing in on some real ish right now. right up the highway, Palmdale, body swinging in a tree. Now the half-brother of one of the victims has been shot, killed, and it just so happens that none of the cameras on the police car nor on the officers that killed the half-brother were on. That's what we need to be staying focused in on.
Well, we can stay focused on that, for sure.
I understand that it's fun and it's entertaining and the names involved and stuff like that, but we can't, as a media, say that Kyrie is hijacking the message by feeding into the message of Kyrie hijacking blaming Kyrie that we're not focused in on the larger issue when we're the ones in control of what we talk about.
Yeah, but it's sports, LZ. It's still around.
They're
sports.
Always going to talk about Kyrie's comments.
You still got to talk about it. It has plenty to do with sports because they're athletes. And you on a radio show and television networks that cater to sports. You can craft it around what the message is, but because they're athletes, it's sports. It may not be games, but it is sports.
And look, LZ, your point is an excellent one, and you're right. We can choose to talk about what we want to talk about. That being said,
we ain't never talked about hockey. It's a sport. We make choices.
Because we would absolutely talk about hockey.
We would absolutely talk about hockey.
What are we going to talk about in hockey?
If an NHL player came out and said something that was divisive in some way, we would absolutely be talking about it. Like I said, your point is a very, very good one. But if one of the biggest names in the league says something, and then another person in the league says, no, we're not going to do that. And then that other big name in the league, in this case, Kyrie Irving, says, well, how about we start our own league? We're not just going to ignore it. It's not realistic. We're going to look at it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about whether or not it's a good idea, a bad idea. And when people start to respond to this, it creates velocity, and that's how it goes.
I understand your frustrations with it, LZ. I understand. I get it 100%. That you don't want to necessarily have to talk about stuff that really, in the grand scheme of things, don't really matter. It's just a bunch of jibber jabber. But at the end of the day, it's a sports topic by a prominent sports figure being not attacked, but being criticized or critical of an ex-teammate. I mean, from an ex-teammate that is national news, that we have to spend some conversation on that. And at the same time, we can also have that conversation, as we've been having, about everything else that's going on in our world, including a company taking down the Ancient Mama logo after all of this has been happening. We're having these conversations. All I'm saying is that
the very premise of this conversation is about how Kyrie is distracting us from the real topics. Kendra talked about it. We've talked about it yesterday. I don't have a problem with analyzing or thinking about the rationale for when you start your own league or your concerns about. I don't have a problem with that. It's like the ticky-tacky little name-calling stuff and who you want to have a fight with that I'm just not interested in, because there's just too many other more important things going on right now. And that's what these players, like Anthony, whose name we've lost now, that's what he's trying to remind you, that, yeah, we're over here. Kyler Murray just said he's taking a knee during the season. Kyler Murray just said, I'm going to be during the anthem. That, to me, is way more interesting because of where he's at and who he plays for and what he's willing to confront than beef between KD and Kendrick and Kyrie.
But let me tell you something, bro.
I'm going to tell you, this is real talk right here. The history books will have you believe that Malcolm X and Dr. King were on opposite ends, because they will find differences in their opinion and highlight those differences to drive a wedge. And I see the same thing sort of happening right now, where now you got this interesting little conversation happening. And I agree, it needs to be acknowledged. But there's an interesting little conversation having about the division that may or may not be happening within the NBA. And more energy is being focused in on how people are divided. and less energy is dedicated towards what people are doing and how they can move forward. I was just in a conference call yesterday with Commissioner Adam Silver, and he's talking about trying to keep the guys focused in on both returning as well as all the different ways in which they want to be engaged. All the different ways, not opposite ways, all the different ways. Because at the end of the day, I'm going to assume that Kyrie and KD and Kendrick Perkins, all three of these brothers, want the same thing. They may not want to go about it the same way, and that's a healthy discussion to have because we're not a monolithic people, but they're not on opposite ends. They want freedom for their kids and their grandkids just like everybody else. So that's what I'm focused in on. Damn that stupid little Twitter beef.
Booger McFarland is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on Mike Gundy, on Colin Kaepernick. That is coming in next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, as promised, we're joined right now by ESPN's Booger McFarland joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Boog, good morning. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, LT? Lawrence Taylor over there. What's happening?
Well, I mean, Lawrence Taylor's not a bad guy to look like Keyshawn. He's probably the most dominant NFL player.
I ain't say nothing about his ability on the field. I'm talking about his looks. I ain't talking about nothing about that.
Well,
what's happening, Booger?
I mean, it's kind of stereotypical to say all black people look alike, you know?
Oh, here you go. There you go. See, you done been around the people. Look, hey, Boog, you done been around the people too long. Let me ask you this stuff, Boog, in all seriousness. You grew up in Louisiana. You played high school ball in Louisiana. You went to LSU. So you a true born, bred Southern boy. Have you ever, in your high school, college, growing up career, ever run into any sort of despairing remarks, negative racial slurs thrown towards you in the heat of the moment, the game, or anything that you felt like, you know what, I need to address? And I bring this up because of what has happened recently at Oklahoma State.
You know what, Keith? When I was younger, you know, as I was growing up, you know, probably 12, 13, 14 years old in that area, I would hear things just from kids, nothing from adults, you know, growing up in rural Louisiana. And so this was 1990. My mother, born in 1955, she shared with me some of the things that she had to deal with. And in my younger years, I dealt with some things from some ignorant kids, but not from adults. And, you know, the older I got, and obviously as you become more prominent as an athlete, your platform and your stage is bigger. So you're a little bit less likely to see those because people don't want you to call them out on a bigger stage. And so nothing crazy, but, you know, kids learning from their parents as they're young and they're saying things. And, you know, I quickly distance myself from those people. But as you get older and you have a bigger platform, I think you're less likely to deal with that because people are afraid of being called out on the platform that we have.
When you look at it, Booger, you obviously been an important member of college football, the SEC, prior to joining Monday Night Football. So you have a sense of college football, the lay of the land. And when you out there and you're looking at the Dabo Sweeneys, you're looking at the Gundys, you're looking at what happened at Iowa, Oregon State, Utah defensive coordinator. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But the state of college football and the negativity, Mike Leach at Mississippi State, coming not only from fans, but prominent people within the administration, people that are supposed to be leaders or saying things or doing things at this time, is it surprising to you? And what would you say to that?
Well, what I would say is that I think it's coming to light now. You know, if you look at what Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State, you know, with the OAN T-shirt on, I don't think Mike Gundy's views changed overnight. I just think Mike Gundy got called out, and now his true internal views are now made public. And because he's holding a position where he has to mentor and coach young black men, he has to come out and apologize and say, I'm totally against it. Well, Mike Gundy, I got to think as a coach that's making $7 million a year and you're in charge of a detailed program such as football, you knew exactly what OAN meant. And so what I think happening, Keyshawn, is that based on the last 3 months and our attention and our focus hasn't been on anything, and now all of a sudden George Floyd happens and then Drew Brees' comments happen. Now everyone's focus and attention is on these matters. And so you're starting to get things that otherwise would not get traction, like what happened at Iowa, like the Utah defensive coordinator. In years past, these things would not get the national news that they're getting now because of our attention span would be elsewhere. But because we are in a different situation now, and rightfully so, all these things are getting called to the carpet. And, you know, I think it's a new time. You know, in recent years, the only sport where the athlete really controlled the conversation was basketball. And LeBron James and Carmelo and Chris Paul and Michael Jordan, and you can go on and on and on because those guys are so visible. Well, what you're seeing now in football, college football in particular, these young athletes are starting to realize that, hey, we have a voice too, and you're starting to see it kind of flexed, not only in pro football, but in college football also.
Booger McFarland joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Booger, with that in mind, that he knew what OAN meant, and I agree with you, and that he hasn't changed his thought process overnight, I also agree with you. Why is he still there? Why is Mike Gundy still the head coach at Oklahoma State?
Well, because I think he can. He came out and he apologized and he can plead ignorance and said that he didn't know. And I think he can satisfy the right people, mainly T-Bone Pickens, who is the number one booster at Oklahoma State. And I think if they find something, I think Apple Williams came out and said that when they were in college, Mike Gundy used a racial slur at him. If they can substantiate these facts, then you could have a different outcome in Oklahoma State. But right now, he can plead ignorance and say, you know what, I didn't know what it meant. I'm going to apologize. I'm going to fall on the sword. I'm going to talk to my team. I'm going to listen. You know, all the HR catchphrases that all these bosses around the country are checking off right now. I think if you go into corporate America right now, everybody has a checklist. And by everybody, I mean all the white people in high positions. And the checklist is really simple. Here's what you're going to hear. I'm here for you. We are listening to you. What can I do to help? Those are all the catchphrases that you're hearing around white corporate America right now. And, you know, Mike Gundy is no different. And you know, it's sad to say, but he can apologize and plead ignorance and kind of move forward. Now, with that being said, I think us as athletes and us as a country, you have to be able to hold these guys, hold their feet to the fire. And I think, you know, Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State, the running back, he's got to be able to say, okay, let's say you didn't know Mike Gundy. Here's what we want to do to change some of the things that have happened around our campus. And so it's very similar to what's happening in basketball right now in the NBA, you know, with the Players Coalition. They're basically saying, okay, amongst this social injustice around our country, you guys, the NBA, have been profiting on black athletes for years. How can we change that and use that to help our community? So if we're going to go to Orlando and play basketball, here's what we want from you. Can we invest in the black businesses? Can we have the companies who are our corporate sponsors invest in the black neighborhoods? And so, again, as we discussed a second ago, the voice is being heard. And for the first time, I think athletes in general, specifically black athletes, can use their platform to help their communities. And I think this is a good thing because the people who are protesting around the country and have protested, they did it because they wanted their voice heard. And so finally the athletes can say, okay, we hear you and we're going to do something for you. So in the end, I hope this leads to a lot of change around America, specifically athletes no longer being felt like that their voice is suppressed and they can speak up. And you don't have to wait till 10 years later for the Iowa strength coach to be let go or the Utah defensive coordinator. And you can get those things called to the carpet as soon as they happen.
Booger, I'm curious. I've been on conference calls with a lot of people in corporate America that you're talking about over the last week and a half. Got more corporate calls today. And when it comes to addressing these racial inequalities, in corporate America, their decision usually is to separate themselves from people who have been found to be acting nefarious in this space. But in sports, particularly college sports, it seems to be uneven. Some are deciding to try and keep and work with. In your opinion, what is the most effective way of dealing with this from a college sports perspective? Is it firing these people or is it trying to work with them, recognizing that their initial apologies may not even have been sincere?
Well, I think when there is a history, let's just take Mike Gundy and then let's take Chris Doyle, who's the Iowa strength coach. The Iowa strength coach, there was a history of disparaging remarks over a number of years by over a dozen players. I think that's something that's ingrained in you, and that's several instances. Whereas Mike Gundy right now, all we have really that's been substantiated is the OAN T-shirt. And so I think you have to take them case by case, LZ, and you got to look at it and say, okay, if a guy did make a mistake, okay, Drew Brees, if Drew Brees made that one mistake, and by and large throughout the rest of his career he has done so much and his actions have spoken for him, then I can attack this on a case-by-case basis and understand that I can help you rehabilitate your opinion. I can help you rehab the image, and I can give you a pass for this. The Iowa strength coach, I can't give you a pass because when you have over a dozen players over a number of years, that tells me that that is deeply ingrained in you for a long time. And so I just think you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. America is a country of second chances, man. We've all had them. All four of us that are on this call right now have had second chances in various platforms and various situations in our lives. So I'm all for that. But I think you have to show that there is something inside you that wants to change whatever it is that has you feeling a certain way. And when you're in a position of leadership, coaches, head coaches, CEOs, you have a position that you have to be held to a higher standard. So if something else comes out about Mike Gundy and you're in charge of 85 scholarship players, probably 65 of those are black, and your team gets the feeling that they can't play for you because somewhere inside of you there is racism, then I think Mike Gundy has to be let go. I don't think we're at that point right now, but we'll see where it goes, because in the course of a week, not only have we had the OAN T-shirt, we had one of his former teammates come out and say something. So let's see if anyone comes out and says anything else about Mike Gundy. But long-winded answer, I just think you have to take it on a case-by-case basis and give everyone an opportunity to explain and discuss what happened.
I'm going to let everybody know about you for real, Bug, since you're one of my former teammates. I'm going to tell them what you're really about.
Well, I mean, you can tell them what I'm really about. What I am about is making sure that my brother, who is all – Keyshawn, are you 50 yet, by the way?
Man, go be quiet, man. Go on and go back and do some TV
or something.
He's getting close. Bud.
Are you right behind me? If I am close to 50, you right behind me and LZ in front of me.
Bug, what you
45, Bug?
No, I'm 42 years old. I turned 43 in December. And the reason I asked if you're close to 50, as you turn 50, we need to make sure, as I stated on the last time we were on the call, that we continue to get in better cardiovascular shape. I
man,
know you
don't
16.
Call with all that television.
Here we go again.
Listen, I know you're 6'3", but we don't need to be 255, 260. We need to be.
Man, I'm not no 260. Whoa. Man, what's wrong with you? Man, I'm
Booker McFarland. Bug, thanks for coming on the show this morning. I appreciate it.
Anytime, man. Y'all have a good one.
All right.
You too.
Bug sitting up here looking like Lawrence Taylor twin. Y'all just Google Booker McFarland and Lawrence Taylor. Put them side by side.
By the way, 6'3", 260. Is there something wrong with that? Do I need to reconsider a couple of things along the way? Take it or shake it is coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Key, let's start with baseball this time. We saw some movement from the owners offering a full prorated salary for a 60-game season. The players have not accepted it. We will have a deal for Major League Baseball by the end of the weekend. Take it or shake it.
End of the weekend?
Yes.
So that would be Sunday?
Yes.
Shaking.
What? Oh, no.
No, it'll be Monday. Monday, Tuesday, it'll come down. They're close. 60 games. The players won around 70-something. You're a handful of games away. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult to get done. As you can tell, the commissioner of Major League Baseball is crying for help right now because he realizes that the fan base and people are starting to get teed off at the owners because the narrative has completely shifted to the player's side and people backing the players, and the players aren't the greedy players as of right now.
That's why I think it's going to happen, because first of all, they went from, well, we'll give you 70%, we'll give you 75, these teeny tiny little incremental improvements. They went all the way to 100% prorated for exactly the reasons you said. That's why I think it gets done very, very soon, because this was the first real step forward. I think baseball may meet them halfway and say, okay, we won't file a grievance or we'll accept an expanded playoff. It felt like this was the first real move forward. And usually once you get the first one, the second, third, fourth, and whatever it is before a final agreement happened pretty quickly. All right, let's go to another one here. The Carolina Panthers, Key, one of your former teams, put out a question asking who their GOAT was, the greatest of all time. And your choices were Julius Peppers, Steve Smith, or Luke Kuechly. No Cam
Disrespectful!
Newton. No Cam Newton was done purposely. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I don't know who did that. It would be hard for me to think that Marty Herney did it as a general manager. I can't see Marty doing nothing like that. And his background is PR, and I couldn't see the actual PR director doing it, because I can't think of his name right now, but he's one of Cam's boys. So whoever was doing it from a social media standpoint is he trying to protect Jake DeLone's legacy or something? I mean, come on. When I saw that, I was like, what are you talking about? Well, you put Luke Kuechly up there, but not Sam Mills, and you put Luke Kuechly up there, but not some of the other players that were good on defense. But you got JP, and you only got Steve Smith. I mean, D'Angelo Williams was a pretty good running back for them as well. Steven Davis was pretty good at running back. So I
Christian
don't know.
McCaffrey is a pretty good football player.
Oh, I found out who did it, Key. It was Kelvin Benjamin.
Oh, Kelvin. Damn, Kelvin
Benjamin. What's so stupid about it?
Where's Kelvin Benjamin at anyway?
Not only is it disrespectful, he's the clear only answer to the question. Cam Newton's the only guy that's worn a Carolina Panthers uniform that's won an MVP.
That's why he's the only guy. So weird.
Yeah.
He leads them in wins, yards, touchdowns, like every major offensive stat he would want.
Maybe Cam gave him the bird on the way out. I don't know. You know,
all right. We heard Antonio Davis earlier say that he wanted to hear from LeBron James. Here's Dave McMenamin on Freddie and Fitzsimmons saying that LeBron does not owe a public statement about playing basketball.
Yeah, for a guy with 66 million Instagram followers, you recognize just how many people that can reach. And when he decides to share an image of the Minneapolis police officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck spliced directly beside Colin Kaepernick kneeling, that might not be LeBron speaking into a camera, but that's saying just as much, if not more, by choosing his platform to share that image to try to burn into people's head just how messed up these times are. And, the people within the Lakers organization, they know he's committed to playing basketball. I don't think he really owes the public a statement about playing basketball at this time.
LeBron James does not need to issue traditional statements, period. Take it or shake it.
Take it. I said that yesterday. I said it the day before. That's what they have social media for. He doesn't like – I mean, I get what AD was saying in terms of, he wanted to hear it and this, that, and the other, and it's cool to tweet. And the man got 66 million people, man. What if he just hit a third of that?
I could see if LeBron James has been conspicuously absent in this space for much of his career, but he's been quite the opposite. I really don't. You say you understand where he's coming from, Key. I don't. I don't know where he's coming from.
Oh, you don't?
Suggesting that. No, I don't understand where Antonio Davis is coming from, suggesting that LeBron James needs to say something in this space.
No, I'm saying for his own self-gratification. not for me and for everybody else that's out there. If Antonio Davis wants to hear it for his own self-gratification, I understand. That's on you, bro. But clearly, with 66 million people, and if you only touched a third of that, I mean, it's the same thing and better because I get to control it. I'm the one that pushed sin. I don't have Jorge in the room splicing and cutting and dicing and mixing stuff up. I'm the one that pushed sin.
Do you think we're going to see a time when we get to where LeBron, and I'm not saying he's not going to have the little, you know,
you're going to always have it. You don't even need to say it, Travis. He's
what's
going
that?
To always have it.
Have
because
what?
Because the negative people.
No, that's not what I was getting at. That's not what I was getting at. What I was getting at is we've all seen it. Key, you've been in the center of it where the reporters surround your locker and you talk about that night's game and you answer questions about what happened in the game. That will always be there. But this idea of having to go and do an interview with CNN or ESPN or anything, are those gone now that LeBron can just get on Instagram, hit record or hit play or go live and address 66 million people instantaneously, or at least have them go back and watch the stories? Are the day of the sit down where a media entity talks to the player, are those headed the way of the dodo? Are they just gone?
No, they're going to always be here because you're going to always have reporters. You're going to always have as bad as newspapers are in terms of sales and things of that nature. You're going to always have news outlets. You're going to always have television on sports. People are going to always do.
No. That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is not there. I agree with all that. I'm saying is what Antonio Davis is basically asking is why doesn't LeBron go on ESPN and offer his opinion on what's going on?
Because he's done it. Because he's done it a million times already.
That's what. I get that. I get that. What I'm saying is, why does anybody need to do that? If you're a LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry, I don't need to do that anymore. I can just do it on my social media platform and get my message out. I don't need to do that. What Antonio Davis is asking is a relic from another era.
Well, it is to a degree, but I think at the same time, you know, LeBron's got all those followers, but everybody. Some people don't have social media, you know, just like some people don't have cable at home. I mean, that's just the reality of the world that we live in. Man, it's so many people. You obviously don't understand the world that you live in the country and the places and people, houses in the inner cities and things like that. Everybody don't have cable, Raj. Everybody don't.
I've had cable since the very first day.
Everybody
my mom and dad
barbecue,
bought it.
Yeah. Everybody don't barbecue and smoke steaks every other night.
All right.
I don't see why not. They're at the supermarket.
Everybody doesn't eat organic food, Raj. Some of
Major
us can't eat organic food.
Major League Baseball is getting closer to an agreement, but how big of an opportunity did they let go by? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.